It's now day three in the court-martial trial of U.S. Army Private Bradley Manning at Fort Meade, Maryland, 30 miles north of the White House. In court today, Jerla Shoman, an intelligence analyst who worked with Manning in Baghdad, testified soldiers who were looking at classified materials watched movies at work, played computer games, and listened to music before a commander found out and ordered them to stop. Shoman, a witness for the prosecution, also said analysts had access to many kinds of information, but that didn't mean they were allowed to look at all of it. Independent reporter Alexa O'Brien has covered the pretrial hearings extensively and is now covering the court-martial trial. She says the trial represents the largest criminal investigation of a publisher, WikiLeaks.
The trial of Bradley Manning is an interesting collision of several larger themes. In some respects, you know, when people ask me, for example, what's it like in the, you know, in this court-martial, it's really actually staged much like any other media event. Yes, this trial is being conducted in a soundproofed courtroom in the confined wasteland of Fort Meade, you know, in the middle of nowhere. The press shows up at major times, like during the Article 13, or for example, we had apparently 350 applicants for the press pool and only 70 made it in on the first day. Today, there was probably less than 10 journalists in the press pool. So to me, the trial of Bradley Manning is as much about what's happening with the prosecution and their case against this young whistleblower, and which ties into the largest criminal investigation of a publisher ever, the WikiLeaks grand jury and its partnership with the Department of Defense and the Department of State and other agencies. Yet at the same time, I think there's also the story about what's happening in the press and what this trial says about the press, the health of the press in the United States. I think what it says is that there certainly is an established sort of press, and there's a business to the press and the media, and that when these kind of important historical cases come up, and they're by a young 25-year-old nobody, they don't show up, even though the First Amendment is at risk for prohibition or chill, even though this is the largest criminal investigation of a publisher in U.S. history. I think it's a bit damning on the press that they'll show up on the first day, but they're not here for the sort of the meat of it, which is really the day in and day out.
One of the charges against Manning is wanton publication. But what does this mean? O'Brien says it's an unprecedented charge in military law.
It's never been used in a court martial, and further, it's not tied to any existing federal violation or punitive article under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which applies to all members of the armed services. And this charge essentially would prohibit or chill the publication of large data sets on the internet. PJ Crowley calls this leak — he's the former assistant secretary of public affairs at the Department of State, who resigned over his comments regarding Manning's unlawful treatment at Quantico — he said that he calls these leaks industrial scale. But in fact, these leaks are really proportional to the information age that Manning grew up in and that he's a part of.
So what happened in court on Monday and Tuesday?
The prosecution's case would cast Manning as a traitor, sort of indiscriminately harvesting information for Julian Assange and WikiLeaks in willful disregard of the safety of military personnel and the national security of the United States. This whole strategy has been unfolding in the prosecution's case since they leveled the second charge sheet against Manning in March of 2011. Essentially, by arguing that Manning was leaking from essentially 2 weeks after he touched down in Iraq to right about the time that WikiLeaks tweet have encrypted videos of U.S. bomb strikes, which was in January of 2010, what they were doing was basically laying the groundwork for not only eroding Manning's whistleblower defense, but also building a conspiracy case in their federal investigation with WikiLeaks. Now, Manning had said, prior to his formal plea, that this charged video called the Guarani airstrike, which pertained to a May 2009 bombing in the Far province of Afghanistan that killed at least 147 women and children, that he would plead to the lesser included offense for it if the transmission date was April, which is when he said he did it, and not November. So what's going on in the courtroom is really a battle between dates. The government actually didn't ask Lamo about Jason Katz, who's involved in the Guarani airstrike charge. He's allegedly a Brookhaven National Laboratory former employee who was fired from his job for allegedly trying to encrypt the Guarani airstrike video that I was just referring to. Fundamentally, the court really just simply tried to establish the chain of custody of the alleged chat logs between Adrian Lamo and Bradley Manning. And the defense really focused their cross on simply trying to emphasize the motive of Manning. So talking about the fact that Manning said that, you know, he cared about people and that he thought that he wanted to inspire, you know, public debate about these leaks and that his good intentions, essentially.
The lack of public access to rulings and motions is being challenged in federal court by the Center for Constitutional Rights, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, and a handful of journalists. 30 news organizations, including the AP, plan to file a brief this week supporting the case. Independent reporter Alexa O'Brien's work can be found at the website alexaobrien.org. For WBAI's Evening News, I'm Rebecca Miles reporting.